Tavassier actually started out doing help desk.
I feel like help desk is really the best place you can start out at if you really want to get hands on everything and pick something that you want to specialize in.
And so at the help desk company, I think you was making what, like 50?
I went from 50 to 75, and then I went from 75 to...
Welcome back to the Tetra Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. If you listen to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, YouTube Music, or anywhere you listen to podcasts, please follow us and leave us a review. And if you're currently watching on YouTube, all we ask is you hit the like button and maybe later on you'll subscribe. Now, in today's episode, I have the pleasure of having one of my former coaching clients on. His name is Tavis. And I was going to tell y'all, like, when I first met him, I thought about, he's from North Carolina. If you ever seen the wood, he was talking just like that when we first got on the phone. And I thought about that. Nah, I'm from North Carolina. But nah, anyways, man, he's been doing great things in his career. And he came down to Dallas to kick it with us. So I want y'all to give a great welcome to Tavis. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. Still hanging in there in this tech space.
Yeah. So what was it like 2 years ago?
It was about 2 years. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. Time fly by so fast.
I'm trying to think. I think it had to be 2022, right?
Because I've been here about 8 months. I was at my last job about a year and 3 months. So I'm going on 2 years. Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah, I think it was like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't remember it being like 2020. Yeah, it was like 2022.
Right.
It was like 2022. But no, like, I'm glad that he's on here, y'all, because I have all these people. I don't want to do help desk. But sometimes some of your technical acumen ain't at the level where you can just say you're going to forego help desk. And some of you guys need that foundation. Tavis here actually started out doing help desk. And now you don't have to tell them where you work at, but we're just going to talk about your title. And what's your current title now?
So right now I'm a systems engineer too for a Fortune 500.
Exactly. And that came from working help desk at, I think it was like a healthcare company, right?
Correct. I was working help desk at a healthcare company. Then I moved over to a small tech startup. And that was a job you helped me land. And then I used the skills that you taught me to apply then to get the role that I have now. So it all compounds and builds on each other.
Yeah, for sure, man. We're definitely going to get into some of that. But first and foremost, just so the audience, they can feel you, like, who is Tavis?
So my name is Tavis Mitchell. Like I said, system engineer too, based out of North Carolina, specializing in identity and access management, Windows Server, a lot of different skills that I built throughout my career that started from help desk and that helped me get to where I am today. So I feel like help desk is really the best place you can start out at if you really want to get, you know, your hands on everything and, you know, pick something that you want to specialize in, whether that be networking or IAM or security. So I'm pro help desk. I feel like help desk is very helpful for people just not breaking in. A lot of people try to skip it, but I feel like it helped me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people want to skip it because they are aware that they may not get paid as much.
Right.
But depending on your skill set, you can get paid a lot at some help desk. It really just depends on what the help desk is asking of you to do. And so I don't think a lot of people know about that. And what made you want to get into IT? Like, what were you doing before you was in IT?
So before I was doing IT, I was teaching. So I got a story, man. So when I first graduated college, I had a degree, but I was working for the city of Raleigh. And I was doing like yard work. I was doing mowing grass, weed eating. So I wanted to get out of that because I had a degree. And, you know, to be a teacher, all you really need is a bachelor's degree. So that's what I applied to and became a teacher. I was teaching 7th grade science. So I always said I'd go back and cut grass before I teach school again. But it really taught me a lot, dealing with the technology a lot. Because when you're a teacher, you're kind of already a IT person because got to make sure the projectors work. You got to know what type of cord is a HDMI. You got to know how to pull the presentations up and help the kids with their Chromebooks. And I feel like since I was already doing that, I said, I might as well just get into IT. I had a cousin that was doing it and I was about to go to a 2-year college, and he was saying, really, what you really need to do is get your security plus. So I was good at tests at the time, and I took my security plus, knocked it out. And luckily, since I was a teacher, I got hired on by another school system that was local to my area as an IT technician. So it was really a easier transition because they felt like I was already used to the school environment. So that's why they brought me into just the IT side of things. So I just been building on my skill sets ever since, getting knocking certifications out here and there, and now I'm here.
Yeah, so before we go into your IT job, I want to ask you, like, why'd you say you would cut grass again before teaching?
Man, it's a different type of stress when you're dealing with those kids, man, especially seventh graders. You know, they just now learning about things and on the internet and just now hitting puberty and all of that, and it's a lot, you know. I give it to teachers, man. Teachers, they definitely deserve higher wages, and their job is really important. So it definitely helped me a lot. And even when I do interviews now, when I tell companies that I was a teacher, they look at you different when you're a teacher. You know, somebody coming from background like us, you know, they saying, okay, yeah, this guy, he's, you know, he's a brother, but at the same time, he was a teacher, so we know he's professional. If you know how to act around kids, you know how to act around anybody. So I really feel like teaching helped me out in my career as well.
That made me laugh because a lot of people don't know how to act around kids.
Right.
But now, having said all that, you said something interesting. You said because you were already in education, it was easier to pivot into a IT role in education. And I think that was a good point that you brought up, because a lot of times, and you know this when yourself, when whoever you've talked to since we've talked, when I'm doing consults, I'm normally saying, okay, what industry are you in? Or have you thought about looking into in that industry to do what you're trying to do? And a lot of times the answer is no. And I'm like, it may be easier for you to pivot that way because you already understand education. You already understand healthcare. You already understand law. You understand all these different industries that you've been working in the last 3-4 years. You just be switching to a different discipline. But having said all that, now you get into the IT technician role. For the, what you was like, you said school board?
It was a county school, Johnson County Schools. Okay. In North Carolina, yep.
So how was that?
It was different. I was an IT technician. They brought me in the first day, put me in with a Tech 3, a guy that had been there for years. His name is Alex. Shout out to him, Alex Guzman. He's from Puerto Rico. He showed me a lot, you know, and he pretty much came in and he showed me the ropes. And in 2 or 3 months, I was on my own. I was responsible for 6 different schools in the area. And we, depending on what day it is, you go to the particular school and they'll have a list of tickets for you and you work through the tickets. Whenever you're done, you can leave. You can either leave for the day or go to another school. So
y'all did, you do stuff like with like imaging laptops?
Definitely. Imaging laptops, just basic troubleshooting that the teachers had going on. Might need to make sure a printer is working. Might have to update the computer or move some files over or put a new desktop in there. It was those Lenovo Think Centers, you know, the school computers.
Okay.
A lot of those. Active Directory. That's when I first found out about that. So
why do you think like school systems are susceptible to cyber attacks? Because we reported on the show a couple of times where some school systems got hacked or whatever. But most of the time, I don't think it was from students. Mm-hmm. I think it was typical phishing. I think that's like the easiest route now. It's not too many people going through sticking flash drives and computers and right. Corrupting them. Even though my fault, that is how I messed up my first computer at home. Flash drive in the public computer, took it from the school, put it in the home, and then the thing started acting.
But you'd be surprised how smart some of these kids are, because some of them how to hack.
I'm not surprised.
Right. Like, I had a couple kids that knew how to hack and hacked into it, hacked into a couple laptops and Chromebooks and changed the settings on it and background and was doing their own thing on it to the point that they had to take them away.
Yeah, I know, like, I always get in trouble for this because you just unlocked, a core memory for me. Because it's really the school's fault.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have been able to do this on a computer. I would get on a computer in the library at school. You know, they got the thing called like screen view or this, so they can see what everybody's doing. I would go remove that. And so hopefully they wouldn't see it. So these computers shouldn't have had admin rights. Right. That's the thing. So that's an issue with them. So think about it. If you can go through, you was downloading stuff and, like I said, songs and everything. That's pretty much what you say, a governance issue.
On the school computers.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's compliance. And so going to that, they thought they fixed us. I'm, like I said, a millennial through and through, MySpace, Facebook, and all that stuff at the time. So we're going to block the kids from using MySpace. Well, I don't know how it got around so fast, but we knew about the K-Proxy. So we're using K-Proxy to bypass the school's policies on blocking us going on MySpace and YouTube. So like you said, the kids have always been like
that. Right.
And of course, more kids than it is administrators, they couldn't stop it. They would just have to come through and look and see what you was doing or whatever on there. But nah, we was always like, even in the teacher class on her computer, like on YouTube or something like that. Like, cause that's when, matter of fact, when I was in high school, that's when YouTube like first, like, I want to say middle school was like when it first came out. So YouTube was fairly young.
Yeah, I definitely feel like we was on the same wave. I mean, we had a site that, it was a site called Fresh New Proxies. And every day they would put new proxies up there. So they'll block 10 of them. We'll have 10 new ones. And then every day they couldn't keep up with it. So we'll just put the new proxy in and go wherever you want to. That's really the shortcut to it. You know, how these kids can really get into anything on the school devices. But I feel like the school devices, they have to be on top of that. They have to know exactly what those proxy sites are that give out those type of lists and block those sites so you won't be able to get on it. So
the easiest way is just to restrict the accounts and not even be able to change proxy settings.
That too.
That's the easiest way. They can circumvent all that by mitigating that instantly. But now, you're at the IT technician job, and I guess at one point, did you feel like you mastered it and you wanted to try to do something else? Like, what was going through your mind?
Definitely. So I always wanted to get into cyber, and I felt like it was best for me to build on the skills that I was already being taught. So I felt like since Active Directory was the first thing that I learned, I said, well, since this is the first thing they learned and this is what they're teaching me, I'm going to become the best that I can at it. So a lot of people, I feel like, try to dip and dab into stuff that they're not really touching at work. And I feel like it's better to build on the skills that you already know than to try to dip into something kind of new. Because when you're in a job interview, they want to know what you did on the job. They don't want to know what you did in a home lab or what you did here and there. They want to know, what did you do at work that made an impact? And if you can't speak to it, then it's really shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah, nah, that's a thing that I'm telling people, a lot of people too, like when they're talking about interviews, people saying like they're getting to the end and they can't get an offer. I would say 9 times out of 10, it's probably because of whatever answers that you gave didn't fit whatever they was looking for sometimes. Or sometimes you're just not the person they wanted or they already knew they wanted to hire.
Right.
You know how this goes. But I like that you said that. I like that you said that because everyone says go do a home lab and all this other stuff.
Right. And I don't have anything against labs. Yeah, you know.
No, they are good. I think the expectancy is if you're going into entry level, that's more acceptable because of, hey, you're entry level, you don't really have a lot of working experience. Now, when you are trying to leave one role to the next one, hey, what have you done? What have you done in your current role that speaks to this role? And I think a lot of people struggle with that because they don't have anything to talk about. They don't really have any stories. And that's the biggest thing, stories. What stories can you talk about? And that's why I tell everybody, hey, write down wins and losses, whatever. Because one question I was never prepared for was, I was interviewing for Amazon a couple of years ago. It was like 2 years ago, I think, a year or two ago. And the guy asked me about, hey, tell me about a time like you failed or you messed up at something. We never prepare for those questions when they ask you to interview. It's always what you did good. Or, tell me about a time of this and that. And not the answer I gave was stupid. I was like, what? Because I went back and listened to it. And I was like, that's stupid. It's like, but I mean, I'm a realistic person.
Right.
A lot of times I know why I didn't get a role. And I'm like, on those, I'm good on. The ones when I can't wrap my mind around why didn't I, those I'm a little bit more perplexed on.
One of the big ones they like to ask is, what do you feel like your weaknesses are? That's one that I feel like trips a lot of people up. And a good way to answer that, I feel like, is one of my go-tos is to say I'm not really that good at public speaking and talking to crowds, because that's not really a weakness. Really, a lot of people deal with that when it comes to, you know, talking to a large group of people. You know, you might have a little nervousness, or, you know, even when you're on camera like this. So I feel like that's something that you can say that's won't really shoot yourself in the foot, but the hiring manager kind of understand, because everybody kind of got a little anxiety when they talking to a whole bunch of people.
I have an easier answer for the weaknesses thing.
Okay.
Instead of personalizing it, just make it something about something that you're not strong in the job description. So if the job is asking you about CrowdStrike and Tanium, you say, well, one of my weaknesses is I don't have the most experience using a tool like Tanium, but I have used XYZ tool that's similar to that. So it makes it easier versus, because before I learned this, I would like, you know, everybody's thinking like, I ain't got no weaknesses. And so you start just contemplating and thinking all these internal things when it's taking you out of momentum you built up. So you really just focus on maybe some things in the job that you may not be strong in. And it just makes it easier. So that's just the easy answer.
A lot of people say, I know this is bad advice, but a lot of people are saying lie in interviews. And I don't really, because I feel like if it's a good hiring manager, he's going to find out if you're lying or not. Because especially if you say something that's kind of sketchy, he's going to keep asking you stuff about that same topic. So I feel like be honest with him. I don't have any experience with that. But like you said, I do. I don't have any experience with Sentinel, but I do have some experience with Splunk, which is a similar platform. You could just say that. And that really will stop them from keep digging into the thing that you didn't sound too confident about.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you could finesse, but it depends on what you finesse on. That's what I tell people now, because we got to finesse. So now that you're trying to leave, what roadmaps, I guess, or not roadmaps, sorry, what roadblocks were you running into when you were trying to leave the first role to get your next role?
I feel like I was leaving, as far as roadblocks, I feel like it was mainly how I talk in the interviews. It was mainly, like I said, filler words and just not giving them exactly what they wanted for the role. I feel like a lot of roles just aren't a good fit. And it's going to be that one that's a good fit for you, but I feel like a lot of people just need to keep digging. But as far as my situation goes, I definitely feel like it was my filler words. It was the way I probably wasn't coming off as confident. I probably wasn't coming off as experienced as they may have wanted when it comes to the way that I was talking. And I just kept working on it. And a lot of time it has to deal with if the hiring manager likes you or not as well. Because people hire who they like. I mean, we can just keep it real, because sometimes you can have somebody that might be more technically sound than somebody, but just because they like that person, they'll hire you over that person. So be a likable person. I like to be an easy person to get along with. You know, those soft skills really matter, because I've worked with some people and you can have the most tech skills in the world, but if you don't know how to communicate correctly and you don't know how to, you know, take accountability for if you made a mistake or something like that, then that can really hurt you.
Yeah, nah, for sure. I mean, and those are all things that, and I guess I actually could segue right into it. I'm trying to think, when we started working together, were we in one of those IT groups? I can't remember.
We're in Black IT Network on Facebook. I'm in that one.
I know, was it that one? Because I remember I joined that one and then I left it. I thought we was in another one. Because I'm trying to see, how did you find out about me?
I found out about you on YouTube.
Okay, that's what it
just was. Searching about certifications, and that's how I found your channel. I think you were talking about Security Plus or something, and that's when I subscribed and I was dialed in.
Yeah, I remember. I think, you know, I'm trying to remember if we actually had like a consult or something first or whatever. And
I think I came to you straight up. I said, man, I want to do the whole 6 months. I said, okay. I think I messaged you on LinkedIn. And to this day, man, I would say I want to thank you, because that was one of the best moves I made in my career. And I'm proud. I'm glad that I did that.
Nah, I appreciate it. And that's a lot of times I'm telling people, like, you know me, I'm not like a salesman or whatever, but so the stuff that I say, I actually mean. So I'll tell people, like, if you're looking at whatever the price is now, just think about it to be an investment in your career long term. Because he's a person that will keep in contact with me. He was like, hey, I just used some of the stuff we worked on years ago. And I just got another bag. So we can start laying like the foundation like for everything. When you came to me, I think, were you still at the county school?
I was at Legacy. I was at the healthcare company.
And so at the healthcare company, I think you was making what, like 50K?
I was making 50K. They had gave me a $2,000 raise, but it wasn't enough for me to stay. Correct.
Yeah, so I remember that 50K, and I was looking at the stuff that you was doing, and that's a lot. And then that's why I say that's what separates me from, like, you know, traditional resume writers. They are good, but if that's not their skill set, they don't know how to pull out or extrapolate different things or tell you what you can work on. And that's what we was looking at. I was looking at your job titles. I was like, all right, we're gonna have to finesse these titles. I was like, I think I changed from help desk to like IT analyst or something like that.
I was an IT analyst. I think we changed it to lead IT analyst. Yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah, we changed it to lead because you got to think about it. It's a sales thing. Like,
right.
Whether we're talking about getting a woman or a job, the woman wants the big dog. She wants the dude in the friend group that's the leader, and the girls are just the leader. In the job market, okay, we're getting that top guy. This guy's, he's a lead. They know their stuff. It's the same thing, and it works on that. And so one of the things was like, I tell everybody, I run into a lot of smart people. We have consultants. They got a lot of experience. I say, you got a packaging problem. And that's what you're packaging. Resume, LinkedIn. Your two issues right there, your packaging problem, why you're not getting interviews and why the recruiter's not in your DMs. Now, when we fix all those, like almost, I don't want to say instantly, but within like a week or so, people's LinkedIn DMs start changing. They start getting hit up. Now, whether it's for the role you want to get hit up for or not, it's not the point. Now you're actually getting hit up by recruiters.
Right.
And my goal is always to just get us the interview. And then we just start listening, playing back interviews. I forgot how many you said. I don't have a Slack. Because I delete the Slack space no more, so I don't have them.
You ain't got the Slack no more?
I'm in other people's Slack, but nah, because, you know, I moved over to Discord.
Oh, you got the Discord now. Yeah.
So I just like Slack, kind of like, because Slack want to charge you for too much stuff.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, like if I want to use all the bells and whistles of Slack, I would have to pay for user in my Slack space. Whereas Discord, not so much. Like it's much more
easy. It ain't free though, is it?
Discord, yeah, it's free.
It's free? Oh wow. So you just make all the channels and then you can just
You can do automations and all this kind of stuff just for free.
Nice.
So it's better for that. So once we start working on that, I say, okay, I know what your problem is. Like you were saying, it's confidence. And it was some of the filler words. And I ain't telling nobody, I still use filler words. But if you can slow down and reduce the amount of filler words you use, you'll definitely sound more confident to the people you're interviewing with. And it's a big one for a lot of people. Like the whole part of just interviewing is a skill itself.
Right.
Let alone with answering the questions and making sure, hey, you didn't lie on your resume. But I mean, more and more as we started going through the interviews and then we started talking about your stories and saying, oh, I think you say this or right here. Then that's when we started landing the roles.
I mean, because I put a post on LinkedIn not too long ago and I've seen you post this as well. We're telling people they're trying to break in because now I get a lot of people messaging me asking, hey, man, I got my Security Plus. What I need to do? You know, that was one reason why I wanted to start, you know, consulting people as well, because so many people ask me. So I'm like, well, if y'all are asking me, then I might as well, you know, help y'all the best that I can and, you know, have a platform behind it. But I just feel like when people, when people are trying to get in, they look at it as cheating if you change a job title. I feel like if you're doing those type of skills on the job that match the type of job title that you're going to change it to, then you can say that you're that.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, I got some backlash on LinkedIn when I said that because people were saying, well, you know, I'm not going to change my title if that wasn't my real title.
And I was saying, you're going to keep on not getting a job. Too.
Right. Exactly.
That's what I was told them.
Exactly. So.
Yeah, I don't be caring.
Some people get it. Those that get it, get it. Those that don't. But don't say we didn't tell you when you're not getting interviews.
It's the same thing as somebody like if you was a housewife and you changed your job to domestic engineer, like on your resume. It's the same thing. That's all you're doing. I've had clients to where he was working in a NOC, but they had him doing security analyst work.
Right.
So I changed the title to security analyst because that's what he was doing on a day-to-day. I'm like, the only thing different between you changing your title and that is just what it says in Workday or whatever HR platform your company uses. I was like, when you do the background check, they're not going to check and see if you did that title. They're just going to simply check if you worked at the company. That's it.
That's and a lot of job titles don't even align at every company. So you might have a system administrator at one place and a system administrator at another place, and they did two totally different things.
Yeah.
So it's really based on what you're doing, not what the actual title is. And that's what people need to realize.
So. Yeah, man. And so I think the first time, the first jump, you went from 50 to...
I went from 50 to 75. And then I went from 75 to what I make now. If we're talking total comp, we're looking at about 150. If we talk, because my company is a Fortune 500. They give us 9% on 401k and, you know, it's real good. So,
yeah, and you,
that was the grind coming up.
Right. And you still remote, weren't you?
I'm 2 days a week in office now.
Okay.
They changed it back. Yeah.
That ain't bad, though.
We were 1 day a week, but they changed it to 2 days a week. But luckily, I'm very local to where I work at. I'm about 5-10 minutes up the street.
Oh, really?
So that helps. But I do have
some. You're in Raleigh, right?
I'm in Clayton, which is like right outside of Raleigh.
Okay.
So it was right, you know, since it's right up the corner. Now, some of my people on my team, not that fortunate. Some people have to come 2 hours away. But luckily, I looked up, man, was close to where I worked at. So, but I do prefer remote work.
Is Raleigh close to Greensboro?
Raleigh is about, it's about an hour from Greensboro.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
I got a client
45.
It's like my second client in Greensboro.
Yeah, Greensboro, they tech space is growing.
Yeah.
But they might have to go to Charlotte or Raleigh to work. Yeah.
Well, that's why I said one of them. And one guy, he's actually remote, a security engineer now. Sysadmin. And the other guy is doing some IT admin, help that stuff for this like credit union or whatever. So
nice.
We're working on that transition slowly but surely for him.
Mm-hmm.
But now, man, so we're going to back it up. So we kind of already talked about the money part. What new skills did you learn at the EdTech company that you were working at?
There, it was kind of different. Their whole environment was different, man. When I was at INE, shout out to INE, man. I got a good relationship with a lot of people there still to this day. And, you know, I really didn't want to leave, but it was, you know, an offer came up that I couldn't turn down. And, you know, I spoke with my manager about it. He said, man, go. You know, shout out to my old manager. He said, man, you need to take this opportunity. You know, he said, he didn't have no hard feelings, man. And that's how a lot of them are when you find a new opportunity. So there I was doing a lot of macOS and AWS, a lot of DevOps type work, a lot of GRC type work. So that's when I was dibbling dabbing in automation, dibbling dabbing in DevOps. So that really opened my eyes up to a lot. And then after, I say about 5 or 6 months, they promoted me to a manager. And then so it was me, and then I had a security engineer that was under me, but our security work was mostly GRC work. Mm-hmm. So it was just gathering evidence for auditors, making sure that we had all our ducks in a row, because when you're an education company like that, people don't want to work with someone who's not compliant. If they go and they see, all right, well, how y'all supposed to be teaching us stuff and y'all stuff not even compliant? So that's how they look at it. So we had to make sure that we were on top of that. And just giving evidence to the virtual CISOs, digging in all our systems, make sure we got the right access controls and all of that. I'm sure you're familiar with GRC work. You had a GRC role, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I like GRC work, but, you know, I want to stick to the more technical side. So
I think you say that for now. I only say that because I was talking to my homie on the way here, and he was like, he had went from managing and security to being technical again, individual contributor. He was like, man, I ain't trying to be technical no more, bro. I need to go back to people management. Whatever. I need to be back to being making the decision maker. So I think you may change your mind as time goes, as you may need a little bit like maybe more flexibility, family life, and different things.
And I wouldn't mind doing GRC work, but it's just like the technical stuff is the fun stuff, I feel like.
GRC engineering. Shout out to AJ Young.
Shout out to AJ Young, man.
So I was like, yeah, he's coined that term, but I think it's a practice now to where GRC pros.
And GRC is technical. People try to act like it's not.
You got to think about it. How you gonna enforce the controls if you don't understand what
exactly.
You need?
Exactly. You got to know where to look. Where is the control located so you can get that information to show the people that you're trying to show that you're compliant. So,
and they just paint it as it's like, I mean, like I've been telling people over the last couple of months, 3-4 years ago, yeah, you probably could have gotten to GRC with a couple of boot camps and certifications. Not so much now because everybody not remote no more.
I feel like a lot of people are going for GRC though. A lot of people now that everybody knows about it and they know that you don't have to be as technical in it, I feel like a lot of more people are pursuing GRC than other type of fields.
I think they still are, but they're finding out that it's not as easy. Because like I said, what stories do you have?
Right.
Because your story is really going to show your understanding of the concepts of the role.
This video is being sponsored by Textual Consulting. Are you still struggling to get into cybersecurity? Are you not getting interviews? Do you have a bad resume? Or is it all of the above? Well, if that's you, then we got you covered at Textual Consulting. My name is Henry Davis. I'm a career coach and a cybersecurity professional, and I've helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people get into cybersecurity with my coaching and my content that you've seen in various places. Now, I specialize in specifically getting people in the blue team, that would be incident response or SOC analysts. I can cover everything from your entry level to your medium to your advanced skills and really help you outperform your resume. You don't believe me? Check out some of these testimonials that I've had from recent clients. So if you're interested, click the link in my bio, textualconsulting.com/offerings to see what offerings that we have available for you. Now, back to the show.
So do you have any story that relates to that? And a lot of people do not, just because of what the stuff they've done, either previous jobs or whatever. It doesn't align with GRC, and then they find out like, hey, this is harder than...
And they're going to know if you're lying or not, everybody. Most of the hiring managers. So,
yeah, unless they like you, unless they, like you said, likability, they like you.
Right. So I just say, hey, man, if you're going to go in there and you're going to tell a story, at least you need to know it head from toe, because they'll dig deep. These hiring managers, man, they don't play. Mm-hmm. So I done got grilled a lot of times. So I'm speaking from experience.
I got grilled before too. It was grilled, but not really grilled. Really, they started asking me different things I hadn't been asked for in the interview. So I was like, I know this stuff. But then I did bad. It's ironic. It was interviewing for Target for a remote role on their C-cert. It was like last year. And I was doing decent. And they started asking me different questions on the panel. And I was like, I noticed. But then some of them stuff I just flamed out at. And I either drew blank, so I was just tripping. I just charged to the game, but then
you know, it happens, you know.
Right after that, though, it didn't matter. They start getting boycotted and they start losing money. So I was like, hey, it wasn't a good idea to work there anyway, because you might have got your bonus or nothing. But I mean, they got a good team, though. I mean, I always wanted to go visit St. Paul, visit like a Target inside like their headquarters, just to see how it looks. I never went to a Timberwolves game, so maybe I can do that. I don't know. But I wanted to ask now, in your new role, like, what do you do in your new role?
So I'm in enterprise IT for a global healthcare company, and they just sent me to Denmark. Did you see when I was in Denmark?
I didn't get a chance to look.
Yeah, so that's where we're based out of, and my company is owned by a Danish company. So it's a European company. So when we came in, my company has over 70,000 employees. So
how many endpoints did you guys have? 70,000?
Thousands, man. I don't even know all of them. we have local team, then we have the global team. I'm on the global team, so it's, you know, more operations and identity assets management. I'm the Active Directory system engineer on my team. We have a VMware guy. We have a server ops guy. We have a backups guy.
Yeah,
we have a
different team.
Right. So it's a whole bunch of different silos, but we all collaborate to make sure that we can push that medicine out. So that's really what it comes down to, making sure that systems are up. We're more reactive than proactive. So when something breaks, that's when they're calling us and saying, hey, DNS not working on this. Y'all need to go in there and fix that, because the line not making the medicine, if it can't make the medicine, the company ain't making no money. Yeah. So,
are y'all similar to like site reliability engineers?
I would say probably kind of, but we're more operations because we're all, my particular team, we're all on-prem. We don't deal with anything in the cloud.
Interesting. So y'all are what, old school AD?
Old school Active Directory, old school Windows Server, Citrix. We remoting right into the utility servers and doing our work that way instead of like, it's nothing cloud-based. So, and that's really what I still trying to, on the side, dip and dab into cloud technologies. And we do have local teams and stuff that I can collaborate with and still get my hands on those technologies. But I feel like legacy technologies are kind of underrated. Because when you're talking enterprise, those big companies like that, a lot of those are companies are still on that old stuff.
I mean, I was just in an interview with a VP of professional services, and we were talking about how a lot of these companies are still just on AD because they got so many legacy apps.
Like,
it just wouldn't make sense for them to switch over. And that goes into, are you on X?
I am.
On X, we were talking about.
I got like a troll account. I don't be up there on my main. Yeah.
One of my followers, he was telling people, hey, listen, AWS is for the new apps. Azure is for the legacy apps. Like, go through and learn Azure because they're going to pay for that because it's in relation to that. If they ever want to migrate, they're probably going to migrate to Azure versus AWS.
So are you more pro AWS or more pro Azure?
Right now, I think the better opportunity is Azure, more user-friendly, and they just crossed, I think the first time they did $75 billion in revenue just for Azure. So I actually would say Azure right now.
And I feel the same because Microsoft is, we all grew up on Microsoft with Microsoft computers and Windows. And everybody know how to use Windows. That's what we grew up on. So I just felt like it was just natural for me to pivot into that area. So
sure. And so you sent me some stuff and I wanted to ask you about this question. It was interesting to me. You said the cert trap. Why most IT pros stay broke? So what made you want to list that question?
Because I'm really, this kind of a hot take here, but I feel like the best entry-level cert right now is CCNA. Because I feel like CCNA, working in enterprise IT, network engineers are in high demand. Or is that just at my job, or is that all around right now?
I think they're everywhere. I had to ask my boy, I got a homie, he's a network engineer. And then, I know Lise does network security now, so I have to ask her. But yeah, no, I think they are, because networking is that's what we did in the episode. It's like, this is the role that people don't talk about enough, right? But it's the backbone for real. Like, networking is like, it doesn't get enough love. I think it's because it feels like it's just not sexy.
Because I feel like networking is, we have the most employees on our team for network than any other product area. And I feel like networking, the CCNA gives you hands-on skills that you can go in, because it not only teaches you about networking, but it teaches you how to troubleshoot Cisco switches. Even though you might not be doing that on a job, a lot of people want you to understand that fundamental networking knowledge. And I feel like Security Plus, yeah, it might be DoD and all of that, but CCNA, I rarely see somebody with a CCNA unemployed.
There might be. I might have to clip that right there.
I rarely do. Like, you'll see people with a Security Plus unemployed. That CCNA, they get snatched up.
But I think that's unfair, though, because one is vendorless and one is a vendor. So I think.
And it's cheaper than a Security Plus. Yeah. And I don't have it. So I'm just speaking to what I've seen in the recent hiring, just being an enterprise IT.
I think they need both. I would say if you're going to get a networking cert, get CCNA over Network Plus for sure. Tell everybody that. But yeah, I'm with you on that, because actually this is a good CCNA, Stay Plus, AZ900. Like, that's a good combo right there.
It is.
You should at least get callbacks off that combo alone. And then you couple that, like, now you start figuring out, okay, where do I want to niche down into? Because that's another reason why I think I like Microsoft cert path so much, because there's so many different cert paths and all these different tools they have that you can use. Hey, if you want to do identity access management, oh, you want to do insider risk, oh, you want to be a security engineer, oh, you want to be a SOC analyst, oh, you want to be a security researcher, AI. They got them all there.
Right.
I mean, AWS do too, but it's just not the same, because, you, like I said, we mostly use a lot of these O365, these different apps, reusing environment. That's what I feel like, and I could be wrong because I've never really looked into GCP or Google Workspace like that. They should have certs like that.
We used GCP, so it was kind of a hybrid environment at my last job, and we did use GCP a little bit, but we used AWS for our like web-facing, client-facing stuff, but our internal stuff was GCP.
Okay.
And I actually got a GCP shirt, Google Cloud Engineer. It's about to expire. I might not renew it because I don't really use it like that.
I just told somebody on the call, I said, hey, I ain't got none of my certs renewed. But I got my Sick Plus in July of 2013. Ask me if I tried to renew it again.
You got practitioner, don't you? That don't expire, though.
What? Practitioner?
Yeah.
All of them expire. I got AZ900. I got practitioner. I'm actually working on, I don't know if you're familiar with Wiz. You familiar with Wiz?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get the Wiz beta fundamentals. So I'm trying to work on getting that at work. So.
But you're at the point in your career, you're a senior, so it's like your experience speaks for itself.
Yeah.
Instead of, because I work with a lot of senior people and they don't have any certs. So I feel like after you get that certain amount of experience, then the jobs don't really weigh it as heavy as somebody just now starting.
Well, I'm still going to get my CISSP because you got to couple that with
the, now that's a good one.
That one or a CISM. There are other ones, right? Anything with a C. Any cert with a C, you might want to get. Even a CYSA plus.
That is a good one.
You can check that out. But to elaborate on that, though, like you said, I think people start cert stacking. Like, it's a video. I know I liked it. I got to find it on my YouTube. It was a guy said that I waste time. I don't know how many CompTIA certifications he decided to get. But he had a background, like, number of things on it. And I actually want to see that because it's tough. Like, I did the episode with my guy. What's my guy name, man? Damien. There we go, Damien. Shout out to Damien, man.
Shout out to him.
When I first seen his channel a couple of years ago, he had how he had passed, I think, like, all three certs in, like, a month or 90 days. I can't remember exactly, but I think I reacted to it. And then, like I said, even before I reacted to it, I let him know how I reacted to it. And you know, I think his son or somebody didn't like my thing, but I was letting his son say, hey, you know, it's cool. Me and your pops actually talk. He already knew I was doing this video because I didn't want to feel like I was getting down on him. So much so that Damien even said, like, when we did our episode, like, I wouldn't even recommend doing that because I really don't think, like, he's got a unique way he can learn, but at the end of the day, it don't really help you that much because when you start cert chasing, it's almost similar to, like, when we're in college or school. Learn the stuff a semester, and you put it down, you never touch it again. And so when somebody asks you something simple, like, let's see what a question somebody may ask somebody. You can ask somebody simple, like, hey, what's the CIA triad? Mm-hmm. And then you mess up on it.
Confidentiality, integrity, availability.
Exactly.
So
I messed up on that, though.
You did?
Way into my career, like interviewing at Capital One. I was like,
that happened.
I wasn't tripping on it, though, because I was like, because for me, I was like, why is it availability? Why is it not authentication? Because I threw authentication there, but it was availability. But it was just funny. I was like,
no, I'm not going to lie. Change. I'm not going to lie. When I first started off, I was cert chasing. I was just trying to get whatever cert I can get to try to land a job, but not realizing that now that I've been through the process, the certs don't get you hired. It's what you did at the last job that you can speak to. That's what's getting you hired. Well, that's why I feel like what has got me hired is the things that I can talk to that I've done in my previous job, not so necessarily the certification itself. Because you can have a certification, but if you never work with it at work, you don't know how to use it practically. And that's where a lot of people get tripped up at. That's why I say try to certify in the things that you're already touching. That's how I feel.
Yeah. I would also say that people get certifications and they just get them and don't know. Problem is simple. The reason why I be telling everybody to skip A+, because when they say they want to get A+, I say, okay, you want to get in cybersecurity? Go find me any cybersecurity job that shows you A+ in the description. And when I tell them that, they start thinking, like, dang, you know what? You're right. Because it's just one of them certs that come to you just like to get money on. I was like, you better off just getting Sec Plus versus going to get you A+. It's a guy in the Discord right now, he actually feel like he's either core 2 or core 1 with A+. And he has to get it at work or whatever. Because I was like, Sec Plus should supersede that. Like, so I don't know why they're trying to make you get something that's like, hey, it It really not. It doesn't. It shows you stuff, but it's not something that you can measure. I always tell people, hey, just go do the course careers IT course. That's better than getting an A+. And then go figure out what you want to do in your career.
Yeah, a lot of people push hard for A+. Like,
I don't know so, why.
And like you said, you don't really see it on a lot of job description. Maybe a help desk role, but anything level 2 and up, you're not going to really see A+ up there.
And then if you keep on having them on your resume, they're going to keep on looking at A+. So if you get an A+, take it off. It's not needed. Yeah. Like, that's why I say you don't need that many certifications.
I agree.
Unless you just got the money. Just like if you make content, you got the money just to pass them, by all means, do it. But for the most part, it's not that, you know, best, what you call the use of your time. Identity and access management is underrated. And I agree because just like networking, this is at the center of everything. If you got bad IAM policies, you good as gone.
Right. I definitely feel like IAM is underrated. A lot of the sexy jobs in tech is everybody breaking in want to be a SOC analyst. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being a SOC analyst, but I'm just saying it can be kind of saturated. So it's good for people to niche out into other areas that can pay you just as much as a SOC analyst makes, because that's the big name that everybody pushes. You know, everybody not going to look up and get a SOC analyst job. So you need to take what's available to you. And if what's available to you is you building on the skills you already learned, which is IAM is the one of the first things you learn in a tech role, help desk, reset somebody's password, create an account, assign a user to groups. Most help desk people know how to do that. So it's like, go where you're welcome, go where your skills are called at. That's how I feel. Now, if your first job was a SOC analyst or something security related, then I feel like it would make more sense to pivot into that. But I just feel like people are only targeting one type of role and they need to broaden their horizon.
Yeah. And I'll ask you, in your experience now, if you want to tell somebody how to get into IAM, like, what would you tell them to do?
Specialize in Active Directory. Active Directory is probably the most used tool out of any tech stack. Especially anybody who uses a Microsoft environment, all of them have some type of AD, whether it's Azure AD or it's...
I thought it was Intra ID.
It's Intra ID now. You're right. They did change it. But, you know, since we're still on-prem, we still use the old school AD. But Intra ID is the cloud, the latest and greatest. So I definitely like that. We use a lot of... We also use SailPoint. Mm-hmm. SailPoint is a good one.
And can you explain to them in language terms what SailPoint is?
So SailPoint is pretty much just automation set up inside of your environment that when somebody requests access to a resource, it has to go through approval before they get granted the access to the particular resource. So it's really like a compliance thing. Instead of just going and doing something manually, they have to request it through Salesforce. And then SailPoint. Then SailPoint has to send it to somebody QC to sign off on it before they give you access. Or if they need additional information, they might ask your manager for approval or ask your product owner for approval before they can give you that access to that particular resource. But SailPoint is a good one. Azure is a good one. App Directory is a good one. You got Okta, you got GCP. It's a lot of different ones. So
yeah. And then I'll piggyback on the SailPoint thing that'll actually make it make some sense a little bit more for people. So for example, you heard of a tool like ServiceNow, it's a ticketing system. And the ticketing system, you don't want everybody to have the same level of access because you can start seeing everything. You can probably start seeing, look, you mess around, type your SSO in, you figure out you finna get fired.
Right.
So what they do is they restrict your access to things based on different roles. So you use a tool like SIAM, SailPoint, and you go through and you request your certain access. So for me, working in IR, I need a certain level of access to look through snow tickets and changes and requests and rhythms, all these different cool words that you can go Google and look up to see what they mean. And I can figure out what a person, are they supposed to be doing something they're supposed to be doing, whether it's from a normal person's account or a service account, or did this account just get created, all this stuff. But in order to get that access, I have to go into SailPoint and request this level, like this ITIL role or whatever. And then once I get that approval and they say, oh, yeah, he needs to do his job, now I got the access. Now I can see everything. And access can be removed like that quickly just from automation. So that's what we do. And then, like, also how we work with identity access management is identity access management and HR, we work with them like emergency offboarding. So we help them with that. And then if there's some unauthorized action that's taking place in IAM, like where automation or some breaks, like we look into it to make sure like it's just a malfunction of the automation versus like something malicious going on. And that's like the part where people, like, you're figuring it out now as your career, like how much everything starts in connecting. When you mentioned you work on all these different teams, that's why a lot of people, like, one of the biggest things you'll see on a job description is must be able to cross-collaborate with different teams. A lot of people like to put that on their resume. I hate when people put that on their resume, well, at least for a skill. You better off just showing your cross-collaboration in an interview or saying, like, we had this project. I worked with, like you said, you worked the AD team. You worked with the networking team. You worked with the vulnerability management team. And we worked on CVE-2025-7534, whatever it is, mm-hmm. whatever. But that's what I'm saying. Like, that's how you can show right. what you did. Like, show and not tell. I think if we get back to the resume section, segue into your next question about, and I agree with you on this one because people don't agree, but your LinkedIn is more important than your resume.
Your LinkedIn is very important, everybody. You need to make sure that you got your LinkedIn in line because that's really shooting a lot of y'all in the foot. Especially people think they can just make an account now, and it's competitive out here now. So you need to be in the right frame of mind to have your LinkedIn, which is your online profile, that they can see what you're working on, what type of things you've done on the job, and really give a good presentation of the type of employee that you are. So I definitely feel like LinkedIn helped me a lot. I have LinkedIn Premium. I'm not saying everybody has to get LinkedIn Premium, but I feel like it gives you a little more features that you can send more messages and reach yep. out to more people. So, and I keep that on the payroll, you know, so I feel like it's good. And hey, make sure your LinkedIn is set up right. So I already got a lot of videos out describing how to optimize your LinkedIn. It's a lot of stuff on YouTube. So.
Yeah, I actually got some stuff I'm actually redoing for coaching because it's changed a little bit. Like, even the job search is more AI-based now when it comes to searching the LinkedIn. And on top of that, if your LinkedIn is good, your DM's going to stay packed for roles you didn't have to apply to.
Right.
Like, I get hit up for great roles simply because my LinkedIn. Like, for example, when we talk about people want to pivot and getting stuck, earlier we were talking about finessing the roles. I did the same thing for me. I'm interested in management and director level roles. And I was like, man, I'm applying and it's not, like, I know I can do it, but something's not working right. So what did I do? I did one tweak. When I worked at Optiv, I was a SOC lead, but I pretty much like the day-to-day manager. Like, I was my manager right hand. Like, she pretty much, so much so to before I left to go to Goldman Sachs, they actually were coming to me about managing the team. Mm-hmm. I just didn't want to manage the team. I wanted to get more money at Goldman Sachs, and I just knew that it might be hard to manage people that I was once on the same level as.
Right.
And so I just changed my resume from SOC lead to security SOC manager. Now my resume instantly started getting hit up.
Just off the job title. So that job title matters, huh?
Facts.
But it really is what you're doing on the job, though.
Yeah, but so the stuff I did in my, if you look at the bullets, like if I read the bullets right now, because you know me, this is the, we are the show where we don't cap. Like, I wish I could call my
show. You were already a SOC manager. You just didn't have that title. That's pretty much what it was.
Pretty much. Like, I did everything, like talking about hoops, you know, pips, all the different things I met with the client about,
right.
helping with metrics, helping with, like, I helped develop QA process for our analysts. It was a way to keep them accountable, help tie into their bonuses, and show the client that we were pretty much guaranteeing to keep on getting them good customer.
Good feedback.
Not good feedback. But pretty much, I'm drawing a blank right now. And I'll probably like cut this part out
what
too.
What did it help them do? The new, the tool that you
service. There we go. We just make sure we're going to give them the best service. But no, I mean, so at that time I was having that. So I really wasn't in the queue. I only work on escalations, but I knew what alerts get them trouble. So I would just go through those and review them, and I'll tell them like what they could have added or something, like context. Like it's way better than how they try to QA our stuff now. They don't know what they do on that QA now. Like we really do it for an audit thing. But I think it helped them a lot because we had low scores in the beginning because some people was not trying. And then that's the point. They start seeing like, hey, this thing is starting to curve out. And so we got it to like a level where like everybody was like in the 90 percentile of doing good before long. So like, for example, I can actually show you. So you see this. The bullet points is already there. I just had to change the title.
It's a lot of stuff you was doing, man.
So it's that things like that. I mean, that's what, you know, it comes down to. When it comes to this whole sales process, when I'm talking to these people, and it sucks though too. Like I changed a little bit in the business model, where I think I'm gonna go back to the old model, to be totally honest. So when it comes to coaching and everything else, I'm actually now, once I get through with this talk, because I'm pretty much revamping like a technically the pivot cybersecurity convo that I'm doing next week is something that I've done before live on YouTube, but I'm actually, this was going to even be better than that. So I may even re-go live with it on YouTube. And then after that, I'm probably going to take a lot of that stuff and go more in detail and turn it to his own course. And really focus on group coaching and then people who really just want like that one-on-one stuff. I think that'd be much more feasible and easier to scale. But
it was something I was going to say. We'll come back to you. How do you feel like, do you feel like more hiring happens in Q4?
Yes and no. It depends. I feel like hiring happens in Q4, and then it starts towards December. It starts being put on hold.
It seems like all my jobs I've landed in Q4 for some reason. And I feel like it's because that's when they get the new budgets and they figure out the new positions they want
to
hire.
Well, I think that's because they're trying to hire right before the budget freeze. Because like I said, I've had stuff, like I said, like I was supposed to be, technically, if all things are going the right way, I'm supposed to be working at Yahoo right now on a paranoid team. But my verbal offer, I never got the written offer because they had to put the job on hold because of, it was the end of 2022 and they were scared of what's going to happen in 2023. So they had to close the rec and reopen it. By the time they reopened it, I had already landed somewhere else. So I was just like, I already found somewhere.
They had froze it. I had a contract role like that one time I had with the post office, and it got all the way down to the end. And then they said, we had to reallocate the budget to something else and we're no longer hiring for this role. I'm like, come on,
that's
man.
That's like the suckiest part when it get put on hold and you got to go through the process again. Because like, I was talking to DeepWatch this year. I thought it was good and gone. It was a security advisor role, just what I was looking for. Soft skills, technical, talking to clients. Just for them to use the budget elsewhere, so the role got closed.
That's how it be. That's why I said, guys, don't quit your job until you know for sure. Really, Henri taught me you really don't even need to quit until after 2 weeks, after you don't work 2 weeks at the new job.
Yeah, if you got PTO, take off. I mean, I'm not going exactly. If you want to know what to really do, book a consult. I ain't going to disclose what I really tell you. Yeah. Like honestly, sometimes you don't know, bro. You get to a job, something happen, something on your back. Background report come back, hey, they gotta let you go. It be all type of crazy stuff in these jobs. They're gonna protect themselves first, so you gotta protect yourself. It's all these different things. Now you got the mandatory RTOs coming back at certain places, which is fine, but so many people base their life around moving to cheaper areas to increase their quality of life for their kids. Now you want them to come back in office. They're not getting a raise to come back in office. It's like all this different thing. This is a big paradigm shift, but this is what it was before the pandemic. That's literally going back to that. A lot of people are realizing, like, hey, you got to be nice to get roles. Like, people was looking up into high-paying roles 4 years ago. Now you're finding out the cream of the crop is who get paid. And a lot of people don't like that. They're down. It's like, hey, you didn't work on your skills. Like I said, you've seen, like I said, some of the people I had on here, I've had Tavion, I've had Dayspring on. I've had Damian on here. All these different people, man, are younger than me, killing the game. And I was like, y'all want you know, their level of success, but y'all not willing to put the work in. Right. I'm like, I bring you up a lot of times when I'm doing consult other people, when I'm doing their LinkedIn reviews.
I heard you mention me a few times.
Yeah, when I'm doing their LinkedIn reviews and I'm going to show them and say, okay, hey, when I was doing Tavis's, we went through and changed this headline. Because people's headlines be off. They had too much stuff on there. It's not attracting the recruiters you're looking for. Your skills, you got the wrong skills on there. You're not posting. And I go through and say, hey, he posts his projects on here. Because I didn't even tell you to make the YouTube channel
right,
to do the things, but it just helped because you got something to talk about.
It does.
On the 2-3 weeks ago, with the director for a role I'm interviewing for, we were talking, and a lot of times they want to know about, hey, are you good with talking to people with public speaking skills? I said, hey, check out this video I did when I was talking to the cybersecurity club about SOC analysts. He said, oh, let me see that. Yeah, I'm gonna let the ad play so you get some, you know, money from this. All these things help. I don't go out and tell people to be a content creator or whatever, but it is a skill. But if you get better at it, you can get positions and you can also leverage it. If you want to be super technical and do these walkthroughs, talk about the work you're doing. That's how Dayspring got Datadog.
Right, because one thing I know about making content, you can't fake that. How can you tell me I don't know how to do something if I'm doing it on camera on YouTube? So it's really an advantage, and a lot of people shy away from it. And I like video walkthroughs better than actually, some people do the write-ups. That's good as
well. So you can do both. Right. So with a tool like Loom, you do your walkthrough on there, and then in Loom, you can say, hey, make this an article. And Loom will make it an article. So that's like two ways. Those are like some of the things like I'm going to be working on with the new clients. It's like, okay, cool. We got to separate ourselves in it. And it's the branding thing. But when I say brand, I don't mean go out here and make YouTube videos. I just mean brand yourself as a person who is interested in cybersecurity, what you're working on. You'll never know. This is something. Shout out to Jordan. She'll be talking next week too at Blackest Tech Week. But she was talking about how she made a post and she wrote about The Wire taught her about, I want to say, did she say The Wire taught her about compliance? Let me see what's on Jordan's LinkedIn. Because it's interesting. Like, people see you make an interesting piece, mm-hmm, and they're going to ask you about it. It's like, hold on, wait, I've never seen anything like this. Let me see if she got it still on here. Featured. Yeah. She said, How The Wire Taught Me Encryption. That's interesting. Wow. Like, no, you're not going to find too many people that's going to mention The Wire and encryption. Right. Like, you know, even me, like, everybody has to find their own style of posting and content. So what necessarily works for me may not work for you. People know me. I say a lot of times the stuff people don't want to say on LinkedIn. I mean, somebody got to say it sometimes. Just like I got a lot of people that like the post, I was like, making cybersecurity awareness fun. I got another one that I'm going to do. I may post it today. That's just a unique thing. I'm taking something regular that everybody's seen and drawing two and two together. Or just when they say, hey, I want you to be able to mentor people, I tell people, say, hey, outside of mentoring analysts at the company, I've helped, you know, hundreds or however many people I've helped getting cybersecurity from either direct mentorship or indirect mentorship of showing them different things. Even when all these people want to get in the SOC, and I brought that up because a lot of people are not even ready to get in the SOC because they can't answer the questions that I have. I had to slow a guy down. I was like, hey, look, man, you making this thing way more complicated. I said, have you ever logged on to your bank account from a different account? Maybe from a different computer or a phone? Yeah. I say, well, to the bank, that's unusual because they used to you logging in from this one place. I say, now put this in perspective of looking at a SIM alert. Let's tell you unusual. Let's pay attention to the factors of what make it unusual and see if this is actually legitimate or is this a false positive. And, you know, a lot of times when people just see the stuff, they just freeze and they don't know how to make sense of it because they don't just have a methodology of approaching problems when it comes to security investigations.
Right, because we deal with a lot of security as well with my current job because it's more infrastructure-based. So when we have a security event, it's so-and-so server is down, find out what's going on.
Yeah.
Because this is a production server. So it could be something as simple as the power went out at the site. Or it could be something as simple as somebody walked by the internet cord and accidentally knocked it out of the wall or something like that. And, you know, a lot of false positives do come through and you may think it's something more serious than what it is, but you got to know how to investigate and figure out exactly what it is to get your services back running.
Yeah. So, and then understanding, like you said, how your companies make money. So I know one of the things you guys may pay attention to is bot traffic. So for us, the industry I'm in, bots is huge. So if the bots come in and shut everything down, then, hey, nobody could get money for what the stuff they need because I'm a financial institution. That's why you understand defense in depth. Like, we got a WAF for that. And then the WAF got these different controls that's going to say, oh, I recognize this is a bot. Boop, deny, blah, blah, blah. Like, all those different things. So we work with, like, the perimeter defense team all the time. And so I think that's why I always tell people, too, why SOC and IR could be cool. Because just, like, on the level of help desk, but even a better level, these two roles connect you to different stakeholders. And then you can really see what's going on and you can probably make your pivot on what you really want to do. And that's why I always say, like, it's better because you learn a lot. You never know. Shoot, you help prevent. If you help prevent a breach or something from an exec or something, hey.
Right.
They might say, any favor you need, let me know.
Right. Because if you're saving the company money, they're going to love you. So that's why I feel like, you know, make sure that you're doing what's, you know how to prioritize what's mission critical and what's just something that you should be, that you can be working on in the background.
Yeah.
So prioritizing is big, knowing what to prioritize. Anything that has to deal with the profit of the business, that needs to be your main thing that you're trying to fix.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to ask you this before I go into some of the other questions you asked me. From making $50K to now pretty much tripling your income, how has your life changed?
It's the same, bro. I mean, I got more money. It's easier, more financially flexible. But as far as, you know, my personal life, I don't feel like I've changed as a person.
Not like changing as a person, right? Yeah. Let me say, it's like an intrinsic thing that happens internally. Start making more money, because then you start realizing, like, if I'm getting 150 now, some job that'll pay me 200 now, 250 300. So that's one thing. Two is like, okay, now I'm not worried about, when we worked together, I didn't even know like what your situation was as far as paying bills or whatever. But you gotta think about people who only make $50K who's struggling,
right?
If you're struggling, like, I ain't gotta worry about paying bills. I could pretty much get what I want if I want to, but I don't got to.
Right.
So it's like that mindset of like, this might be a better question for you since you say like you're pretty much the same. Have you let lifestyle creep come in, or are you still maintaining the same level of life you used to?
Definitely, I feel like I've started doing, but I like to be smart with my money anyway. I don't just spend it on whatever. Like, you know what I'm saying? I came out here to hop on the podcast because I knew that can help my brand. Yeah. You know, because, you know, I'm starting something similar. So, you know, I definitely wanted to, you know, I feel like if you're going to be spending money, then at least spend it on something that's going to help you and not spending on liabilities. But that's me. So I know everybody's not like that, but you still got to be smart with your money. You know,
still
even
like
if you're making money. I heard Tay say one in an interview, he said, man, he was young and he was making a lot of money and he said he was just blowing off.
Oh yeah,
he was
younger than me. We always working together.
So
he was living his best life. So here's the thing, like, if you want to be honest, a lot of us come from situations where we probably the people in the family that's made the most money ever, if it's our immediate family.
Right.
My parents have never made what I make, probably never.
Mine either. Right.
So it's twofold. They never had, so they try to tell you something, but it's like,
they don't really know.
You can't tell me you never really had you never seen this amount of money hit your account every 2 weeks.
Right.
So it's hard to kind of listen to you. Like, it's easier to listen to somebody who's been there before. So if you're talking to a dude that's currently making half a million, or me and you, you know what I'm saying? If you asked me about it, I would, you know, I give you my advice on what I think.
Right.
But you can listen to me. It's like, okay, cool. He's been making X amount for whatever. So if he's telling me this is what he would do, it makes sense. Cause I tell a lot of people, like, shoot, if I go back in time, like, I loved having my Mustang, but I really didn't need it. But I always wanted a Mustang.
Yeah.
Cause that's just what I wanted.
I still want a new car. I ain't bought one yet, but I'll be looking at them though.
If you don't really need it, I wouldn't, because I was like, shoot, no car note is the best life. So, I mean, like, even when it comes to school, like, something panned out right for me for my master's, because I plan to, like, have most of it paid for at the companies. And I end up, you know, leaving one company, and then the next company laid me off. So I was just like, hey, I'm just stuck with whatever I got to pay, but it is what it is, because the return on investment I got worked out for me. Because prior to going to grad school, I think I only owed, like, $12,000, $13,000. It wasn't a lot. Master's is what, like, added a lot of money on there, but that's working itself out.
Do you feel your master's helped you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it helped me because now people, you know, I think about a recruit. So you got what a job called basketball. I got a master's.
Right.
Like all these different things. Like now, even in, like you said, management, I got a master's and it's versatile. So my master's degree is in technology management. It's not just in cybersecurity. So it's very versatile. And I'm in also when we talk about this, I've been putting together in the last 5 years a dynamic network to connect me with people that help me make the same, if not more money outside of my main job, not even including what I can do in my own companies or anything else. So that's when everything's like just the mind shift of what you can do. And it's not even a, you know, I tell people all the time, if I had one or two guys, I could have bushed all over your head a long time ago. I could have went and rented a Porsche 911.
Yeah.
Got me rented like a watch or something like that. Yeah. And started acting like I was making all this money. And really faked it till I make that. I could have ran a bag up on y'all.
A lot of people do that. And I can't really like knock them though. Because I understand what they're trying to do. But at the same time, it's like you giving off a false narrative that is like that. When all the time that it's not. So you might be an outlier, but the average person, they not doing that. Right. So,
and that's the thing. Like, that's why I could never make bold claims about. That's why I never said, "Hey, man, come work with me. I'll help you get in cyber in seven days."
Right.
Like I've helped somebody do that, but I can't. Like, even last night, like getting another client, like they asked me, like, "What could I expect like in 60 days?" And I said, "I'm gonna keep it being with you, Chief. I believe we can get a lot of stuff done pretty fast, but I can't put a time limit on just because I'm not the person hiring." I was like, we know this thing's a company. Just like the stuff we're talking about, stuff being put on hold and stuff. I told him straight up, like, you know, these things happen. But I can say that we will have success because that's nothing but I've had. Like, everybody's, like, got interviews. Whatever. That's listened.
Interviews, yes. But they still got to sell themselves once they get in there. Now, I did say you helped me get the interview game popping. Like, as far as the interviews go, that helped. Like, the methods that you've taught me definitely still helped me today get interviews. And you might have to tweak something here or there now and then, but it's still the same general blueprint. So, and yeah, I try to teach the people that ask me for advice, I try to teach them the same thing. So,
yeah, the funny thing too is I get new people and a lot of times they're not listening to what I'm telling them because they thinking in their mind, it can't be this simple. And I'm like, I'm telling you, it's this simple. I got a client right now, well, actually, yeah, he's still in his year time period. ZA. He has an internship right now. Before he got the internship, he wasn't listening. Then he finally started pitching himself and sending the notes and everything else. He was like, yo, look at this. They responded. I was like, I told you. I was like, I ain't got no reason to.
Yeah.
I'm like, why would I lie to y'all? Right. You know what I'm saying? Just to get y'all money.
This guy's not lying, y'all.
Like, that's the thing. I was like, before it's too late, I'm like, dang it. Why did not listen? Like, I've had so many people where it's actually kind of funny to me. We'll have a console and they're not ready to jump right there. They got to think about it. And then they come back and then we have success. Like the guy I was telling you about from Greensboro, that's the system admin. That was system admin. That's the security engineer. Like he was working at a law office and he ended up just quitting because they was doing too much.
Mm.
And then within the month, we landed something.
Nice.
And I was like, bro, we could do that back then.
Yeah.
But you was waiting. I'm like, I'm telling you, it's a thing called opportunity cost. Like, I'm not trying to be like, there have been some people not necessarily I've been pushing you on, but I've been reaching back out to them. Like, well, I'm trying to help you out now because I know how I get in Q4.
Right.
I was like, if you go ahead and get with me now, we can get a jump up on the competition versus you kind of coming later. And now it's a little bit harder because, hey, you didn't want to break the bread then. I was like, sometimes that's what you got to do. Just look at it as a long-term investment.
You got to be willing to invest in yourself from people who are knowledgeable in the things that you are trying to achieve. And I've learned that even in other fields in life, man, you gotta, because when you talk to somebody that's already been through it, then a lot of the BS goes out the window because they've already been through it. So they can tell you what to avoid and the right way to do things. So mentorship is big. And, you know, Henri, the way he mentored me, like I said, it's still helping me to this day. And I would definitely recommend his services.
Yeah, not only that, and I always tell people too, is like, just because like you may not be a client anymore, I don't just stop like talking to you. Like, it's not like once you get a job I just kick you out the Slack or Discord. I'm like, I still talk to people like regardless. Sometimes somebody asked me something. I was like, bet. I said, I ain't got time, but like, hit me up on Discord or whatever, and we can probably squeeze something in. So, I mean, for me, I just always been that type of person. Like, whenever I get like maybe super busy, maybe, or if I start getting like different coaches to kind of meet the demand. But for the most part, I'm still very reachable. Like, there'd be people getting on the call and say, man, I can't believe I'm talking to you. It's like, man, I'm a regular dude, man. I've never showed myself but a regular guy. Like, I put my pants on like everybody else, one leg at a time. Yeah. Like, I ain't on my Shedeur Sanders or nothing. Yeah. Like, I'm just regular, man. But I think, like you said, how people raise background. I seen you cutting the field the other day in a tractor.
Yeah, yeah.
They gave me flashbacks of I used to be a musician at my home church, and then so
nice.
For a time period when they didn't have like the grass man, we used to cut the church grass in the zero turn. So we used to do that.
I even go back.
So
you know before. What you're doing, huh?
Right. I ain't did in a while, but yeah, okay. I did, people don't know. I can tell them all the time. Like, I grew up doing hard labor, like helping my dad and my uncle do driveways, so concrete. So actually helping them. I didn't set up the forms, but I had to dig it out so they could form it.
Yeah.
So digging that out, all the dirt, and then even finishing some of it. Like, I've done that.
Did some hard labor.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, think about it. I'm not a city
from
slicker.
The country, man.
We got our own land and everything.
Ain't it? Yeah, that's the country for real.
So I tell my pops all the time, it's like, yo, what we doing with our land? Like, I've dug, like, these post hole diggers. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I've slept good. Like crowd has kept, like, starting the garden with that tiller and just straight hoes. Like, that's hard.
Yeah,
this is stuff we was doing like in our teenage years. So we was like stronger than like a lot of people just based off of not even hitting weights like that. But I say that to say, like, I like respect everybody who come and do anything with me. I respect their time and their money. Cause you could have went and spent it anywhere, but you chose to like come kick it with me. So I try to do my best to help you get whatever. Like last night, a guy was telling me, hey, like he's currently working at a Peraton. The contract got doged or whatever, and I was like, he was like, let me know if you know something. So my man's working the DMV area and he's been looking for some more like IR SOC analysts. I was like, bet. And instantly I hit him. He was like, yo, well, send him this and send me his resume. And so it was like, I could have just said, hey, well, pay another fee or whatever and do this, but I'm like, it really ain't about that. Like, that's the thing. Like, the part you can't really pay, I mean, technically you could pay me to get into my network, but other than that, this is what the not what you know, but who you know come in. Because you never know who knows somebody. Like I said, I got directors and managers, me and other people in the Discord that you wouldn't have access to unless it was for me.
Right.
And that's all I'm trying to tell people. That's literally how you don't have, I see all these people that's been working so long going through it on LinkedIn. But I was like, what were you doing while you working? Were you just complying? Were you not interviewing? Were you not spending your network? Like, what were you doing? Cause you know you can't count on a job. We don't have pensions no more. We're not, you know what I'm saying? I got fam that's in Charlotte. They work for GM. They always going on strike.
Wow.
So you can't count on them. Come, you're gonna always have to take care of yours, just like they take care of theirs. It is what it is.
And another thing, people say how important networking is, and networking isn't just solely knowing somebody who works at another job that can get you hired. Networking is reaching out to mentors, reaching out to people that know the field so that you can learn the tools that you need to land the job that you want to land and the skills that you need to learn. So most of the jobs that I've got, I didn't know anybody at the company prior to. It was just me interviewing, but the networking that I use outside of work to get the skills that I use to do good in the interview was still networking when I had you as my mentor. So,
but not even that. If we take it a step further, the thing I tell people and where they mess up at is they'll just reach out. Somebody never talked to. Can you refer me this and that? I'm like, well, for one, let me go to your page. I don't even know you. Instead, connect with somebody. Like, whenever I have a good interview, whether regardless or not, if it turns out my way, I'll connect with the person if I like them and say, hey, I really enjoyed our conversation, yada, yada, yada. Hey, please let me know if I can ever help you in the future. Why? Because I'm presenting myself as a person that can be helpful to you, not a take person. Networking is give and take. Present yourself as a person that can help. Like, even if you want some help from me, like maybe volunteer, hey, I'm trying to get in cybersecurity right now. Do something. I don't have any money, but I got a background in graphic design. I would love to help you make thumbnails. So they're like, you never know where that may take you. So if you can provide a solution to somebody, because that's a similar thing of why you shouldn't just ask somebody to be your mentor. Come in and do work. And if you put in enough work, because your mentor relationship is kind of a little bit more as not as professional to where you say, you know what, hey, I'm going to unofficially mentor you because I like you and I don't have to keep on telling you to do something. You about action and I'm going to help you get somewhere. And that's literally all you got to do.
A lot of people lazy though, man, honestly.
Oh yeah, for
a
lot of people. That's why I make them pay.
Right. They think that you're just going to, like, you still got to do the work. I could tell you what you, like what they say, you could bring a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And, you know, you could give somebody all the advice in the world, but if they not following it, then, hey, it's on them. And, like, people take you more serious when they pay you.
Yeah.
Because their money is on the line. Then they say, okay, well, I need to listen to what he's saying. And then, you know, they take it more serious. So,
yeah, people that pay, pay a little attention. People right. that pay a lot of attention.
Shout and out the, to more, and the more success that. You get, the more y'all gonna have to pay. So,
yeah, for sure. And you had some on here about office politics. And I know it's a little different. It's a little bit more covert in remote work versus right in your face when you actually on site in the office. What did you want to talk about when it came to that? Did you have something you experienced?
Yeah, so office politics, especially when you're in enterprise IT, at like a big company, a lot of things and processes move slower than they would at a smaller company. And you got to know how to navigate those environments. And you have to realize that every company doesn't move the same way. So you got to be flexible and be able to adjust to the type of work environment that you're working in. Because right now I work in an agile environment. You ever worked in agile? And I wasn't used to that.
2-week sprints?
Right.
So sprints did you have...
But we're infrastructure. So it doesn't really tie in with infrastructure because we're more reactive rather than like devs with agile. So it was something that I had to get used to. You know, having a product owner where your technical manager isn't even the manager that hires and fires you. So my actual manager doesn't track any of my technical work. All he does is communicate with my product owner and he tells him.
So it's your stuff like in Jira and stuff?
We use ServiceNow.
Okay. Yeah, you ServiceNow. That's interesting that y'all use that. Because a lot of people use like ServiceNow more for like, they use both. They use Jira and ServiceNow because like it may be more details in the Jira versus everything in the ServiceNow. Because like I said, you just don't want everybody seeing so much stuff and like those tickets and everything, which is why, like, for example, in security operations, a lot of times you're not going to see us put, like, if we're working on certain content or different things we're looking for, it's not going to be in ServiceNow simply due to the fact that you don't want somebody who could possibly be an insider looking at the things that you guys want to put in place and figuring out how to circumvent different things.
So we got a platform called Azure DevOps, which is pretty much Microsoft version of Jira.
Okay.
So that's what we put our projects on and stuff like that. But
and so you have to do that like in 2-week sprints?
Correct. Like, but it's really sometimes it might be sitting around because you're waiting on funding from somewhere or you're waiting on somebody else from another team to do something. So even if it's a 2-week sprint, the stuff can sit around for months depending on whoever's. How big a priority it is.
Yeah, man. So at JPMC, man, I got my wake-up call in the Agile environment because I used Jira, but it was mostly like, hey, I'm going to sign these to you and then work them. It wasn't I had stuff to do and put them in Jira. Like you said, a product manager, I became like a product owner of like a different type of product that they were trying to introduce for the connectivity assurance team. And it was just different stuff. I didn't know. I just was letting my stuff go to them. Scott was like, nah, you need to like close it or extend it and open a new thing for every 2 weeks. I was like, well, man, somebody told me because I didn't know. I thought I was doing this right. So I like the almost went the whole time there, really not knowing what I was doing when it came to Agile.
Learn Agile, guys. At least watch a little YouTube video on it or something, because the bigger the company is, the more likely they're going to use it. And it's a lot of people, it catches a lot of people off guard, because I was used to roles where I come in day one and it's, do this, and I'll come back and check with you in a couple of days, and if it's done, we'll move you on to the next project. Agile isn't like that, because you have so many layers. You got a scrum master, you got a product owner, you got your scrum meetings.
Hey, right. You got any blockers, any impediments, all those different things that you're going on.
So,
yeah, man. Now I want to ask you, if somebody wants to either kind of go through your trajectory or the path that you went through, or even do the job you do now, what would be the top five skills you would suggest that they need to learn in order to do a job like yours?
So I'm working enterprise IT, and it's pretty much the top five skills that I would say right now to get in big IT with a big company. I would say you need to know networking. I feel like that's the number one. I feel like even if you don't know anything else, if you know networking, it's going to put you a step above a lot of other people. You need to know Microsoft. You need to know. So are you talking about my role particularly, or just
in
like,
general? Like, for example, when I tell people, hey, if you want to get into SOC analyst roles or you want to work IR, hey, learn Splunk, learn how to investigate logs, learn about the cloud, learn about authentication. Like, you know, in this one, you have to just be that. Hey, learn about Windows processes.
Right.
Learn about EDRs. Just different things you should learn about to kind of be able to do and triage when you're working. So more so for you, like, for example, like learn Active Directory, learn networking, learn, you know, Windows Server, Exchange, all these different things that you made, PowerShell, stuff that you're doing at work. So
with my job, definitely, I would recommend learn Active Directory, learn Windows Server, learn about networking, learn about VMs, learn about like VMware and Citrix and a bunch of those legacy technologies. Because like I said, my company is really old, man. We got some stuff running on, man.
DOS.
Yeah, some real old OSs out there that I see. So don't be scared of the legacy technology. And because a lot of these big companies, they still running a lot of that old stuff. So.
Oh, yeah. You just don't know. Like, people don't know. Like, I tell people all the time, hey, listen, if some of these old companies get hit, y'all gonna see firsthand.
And a lot of the stuff is, most of it is cut off from the network anyway, but it's like, still.
Yeah, I mean, it may be cut off, but there's still ways that they find out because they just work on the end user. That's the easiest way. Like, we got all these cool tools and stuff. Like, let's see how we can get the end user involved. Job hopping. I know you put something about job hopping. Everybody co-signs on it. Like, I agree to job hopping, but I agree to it from a standpoint of job hopping to better roles and not just job hopping to the same role, because that just leaves you like this. Right. So your stories will start to plateau and you'll be hard-pressed to find how to take the next leap. Versus, hey, at least you go to help desk, you know, job hop to sys admin or whatever. Okay, cool. You went from sys admin to cloud engineer or something. Now you do solution architect. Like, so you're job hopping, but you're job hopping to different roles that now you got all this different experience and you've completed things that you could talk about. That's why I talk about, like, when you want to job hop. And I say sometimes if you get to a new role that's bringing you different things to do, unless it's just unbearable, don't job hop just yet. Get some things under your belt and then leave.
Right. Job hopping, I feel, is very important. Tech is one of the only fields where you can pretty much stay somewhere for 6 months and jump your salary $30,000 to $50,000 just off of what you learned from the last job. And I really feel like it's important to, when it's come to job hopping, don't just try to job hop to anything. Like Henri was saying, don't try to job hop to lateral roles. Try to job hop to something that's a step above what you are already doing. And when you do it, make sure that you're using the advanced skills that you learned from your old job to apply for these roles. So that's how I feel about job hopping. Job hopping is, you know, it's what a lot of people in us tech, all tech bros pretty much job hop.
Yeah, because I think, like I said, in 2 years,
right,
you came all the way up.
Right. So
in 2 years. And you got to think about it compared to other jobs where it's just a steady state. Like, it might take them 5 years to make $95,000 from $50,000.
Right.
And you be like, man, nah, that's too long for me. I need to, like, cost of living is like going up and I'm trying to like have a family and all this other stuff. And so,
yeah.
But I think honestly with AI, we're going to see more people go back into the humanities and some of those other roles just because I think that's still going to be needed. I think they'll be enhanced by AI. So that's cool to see.
And I'm going to vouch for networking one more time because even with the advancement of AI, All those AI has to have something network set up for it to get the information. So it's the backbone of everything. Without a networks, AI is not going to be able to tell you anything. So even as AI advances, networking is still going to be in demand. And I feel like CCNA is one of your best break inserts. That's what I
and
I
also say look into data centers.
Data centers as well. Look at that.
I got two questions for you. One is, what's something I didn't ask you that you thought I would have asked you?
I feel like you touched on a lot of the good stuff, man. Because I know we were kind of brainstorming before I came in here, but I know you didn't ask me about my sorry Panthers, but we're going to try to win some games this year.
I mean, they is sorry. And I really don't like the fact that people been capping on Cam so much, because that's how you always tell when you had a good QB. When a good QB leaves, the team is trash.
Yeah.
That's how you tell. And I'm like, people really have been capping on, like, Cam won him with a trash team.
Cam was good, man, but
he was. Then he got hurt.
He was great, but he just didn't win the Super Bowl, and he didn't jump on the ball. That's what's going to shoot him in the foot for the rest of his life.
Yeah, but he can't really tell y'all the truth and say, hey, the script was for me not to jump on the ball.
Right.
He can't tell y'all the truth. At least I know that, like, I'm a conspiracy theorist through and through. I'm a Peyton Manning fan, but I knew they had to let him ride off in the sunset just like the year – 2 years before, they made him, them lose to the Ravens so Ray Lewis could ride off in the sunset. Mm-hmm. Then how when, you know, it was time for the Legion of Boom, they said, hey, y'all don't come up to show to play today. You know, this historic offense, y'all are going to score 14 points and forget how to play. Like, hey, throw up, you know, Reggie Wayne run the wrong route so Tracy Porter pick it off so Saints can get their Super
Bowl. Right.
Like, I think, look at all this stuff, because the stuff is uncharacteristic to me.
Peyton had to win that. You're right. Yeah. It wouldn't have ended right if Peyton didn't finish with a Super Bowl.
Yeah, so, I mean, people can count on him, but they already know. It's just like, I get it, but let's not act like they ever gave him any type of team that's anything like them Eagles teams Jalen Hurts had.
You're right. Jalen has a very good team. I ain't taking nothing away from Jalen, but when you got the best running back in the league, Saquon Barkley, your O-line defense is fire. Right.
Top five receivers.
A.J. Brown and good Devontae end. Smith. And, yeah, like, come on, bro.
And the Chiefs, you know, can't block, you know.
You could put an average quarterback on that.
The funny thing is the Chiefs had actually been supposed to been losing. Like, to me, they knew for a fact they had to. Even I feel like they'd be making the Ravens play different ways to lose, because I don't think that Eagles team is beating that Baltimore team with Lamar back there. That's what I think.
Yeah, it's a lot of politics that go into sports that we don't really know about. But I didn't call it, though. I didn't call the Eagles. I actually thought that Pat Mahomes and them was going to win.
I didn't.
You thought you knew the Eagles?
I'm in a division. My team, like, plays them, really beat them twice that year.
You're a Broncos fan, right? Yeah.
So they really beat them twice, and it just so happened that they got a BS call that helped them win. Like, they had been getting BS calls the whole year that was helping. That's how you knew that they were fraudulent. And it's not even about Pat Mahomes being fraudulent. They just, that team was just not the best Chiefs team that's made a Super Bowl. And so, I mean, you can't count them out when it's playoff time. He's like the Steph Curry of NFL in so many words, just because he just do different stuff.
Yeah.
But he's also benefited. Like, one of my homies, he's a Chief fan. Mm. Like, let's keep it a bean. Let's not act like they let these safeties play like they used to play in the era before this that I grew up watching.
Yeah.
So I want you to stop acting like, yeah, we probably got better receivers, but like, niggas was laying woods on people.
Yeah.
And they wasn't coming across the middle.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't even hit like that no more. I say that because either last year or 2 years ago, Kareem Jackson kept getting put out the games.
Yeah.
And he was doing legal hits. So I was like, y'all don't want nobody to hit nobody, bro.
Right.
And so that's why I was like, bro, this stuff.
Especially when they had the whole Taylor Swift thing going on. We knew they was going to win that year. Yeah. That brought the NFL so much money. Man,
listen, bro, when I be seeing all that soft stuff as a person who used to play defense, I was like, I don't want to see this, bro. I came to watch people hit, man.
You was on defense. What position you played?
Strong safety.
Okay. You was batting in the backfield. I was on that line with it.
Yeah. So it was strong safety, outside backer. I played corner at times, like nickel. Or a couple of times I played outside. It just depends on what the rotation was.
DB. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I ain't tall shit. I wasn't going to be up there at the line or what's it called, or a running back. But, like, my favorite player at the time was Bob Sanders. So Bob Sanders was, like, my size, so it's like perfect.
Yeah.
And like I always talk about all the time, he just retired, but like, I got to see the man, myth, and the legend, Honey Badger, in high school go up against our best player, and they was back and forth.
Now, I talked with Dom the Cyber Genius about this. Do you feel like sports helped you navigate, like, corporate when it comes to jobs and working with teams and stuff like that? Do you feel like it helped you?
I don't think it helped me in that area. What I do think it helped me is succeed in intrinsic things that you get from competing. I think it helped with that of being able to beat out somebody else just because competitiveness. I think it built that. But I already knew how to do a lot of stuff before I started playing sports. Mm. And that kind of comes from like school and other things. So I really don't think it contributed to that much. I mean, sure, football is the ultimate team game. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, yeah, we're relying on them, but it's not in the same way. Like, hey, kind of it is, but it's not like, hey, you got to keep outside contain and they're going to score.
Right.
You know, so I can see. I mean, I say both. I mean, I will say, like, if you were being a leader and, you know, different things, like, I learned more things in, like, retail on how to lead versus, like, through sports, so. Of learning, like, okay, this person's good as this, and this.
Right.
Treat these people differently and to their strengths, and then we're going to have a better team. Versus trying to make something they don't really like to do and trying to force them to do that. That don't never work well. And the person's like, man, why are they making me do this? They know I don't like doing this.
Yeah.
So, that's that, man. But Tav, man, how do they follow you, bro?
So, I'm on YouTube at Bite Size Balance. That's my channel. You can follow me, give me a follow on there. I also have a Instagram channel under the same name, Bite Size Balance. You can reach out to me if you need some help on a resume or something like that, or if you just want to chop it up or talk about tech, I'm always open. So give me a follow on YouTube.
Bet, man. Y'all already know how to follow me. It's been another episode. As I always say, let's stay textual. We out. Peace.